But at this point, I want to discuss three issues with you. I don't know Mr. Blackman, so therefore I cannot speak to any of the accolades on the behalf of Mr. Blackman. However, I want to speak, though, to the issue of the resistance for teachers going back to the classroom as proposed by the Minister of Education. I also want to speak to the contractual arrangement employment for public servants. And if I get the chance, I would like to speak to the minimum wage proposed by the government of Barbados come April 1st. So let me start with the teachers first. Because I've been hearing a number of things on this calling program and arguments, Peter, to my mind, that does not make any sense. The last argument I heard was somebody was supportive of the president of the teachers' union, Pedro Shepherd, when he spoke about erecting a cage at the desk of teachers in the school. Now, this is my concern in this country, right? Teachers in this country, Peter, are kept in a bubble. Let me explain what I mean when I say kept in a bubble. There are temperature checks on the entry at the premises, at the schools, both secondary and primary, and they're then hand sanitized and so on, and they make their way to the respective classrooms. Now, under no circumstances throughout that day, these teachers find their way mingling with any member of the public because they're on the premises of the school, right? But yet, we are hearing that you should build a cage for teacher, right, over and above the student. So the only body who can catch the coronavirus is the teacher, because this is level of nonsense, and this is where something in this country with this nonsense. Now, and they're making the case that their preference is to go back to these classrooms in September. I want to ask the teachers in this country, if they do not go to the supermarket where they mingle with members of the public, stay up in shopping lanes where they mingle with members of the public, go to gas stations, catch buses to get to respective schools, right? Because this nonsense bit about trying to be overly protective. I don't have a problem with the teachers want to protect themselves from any harm or danger and keep themselves safe. But the bottom line, Peter, is that the coronavirus only allowed you ever so much that you can do to keep yourself safe. And that I do not believe that the children of this country should suffer the fate of a person who selfishly decides that only them must be the ones kept safe over and above all other things. I'm saying that the teachers in this country must understand, Peter, that the government, and if you check out the world, you are seeing the gradual phase of children going back into the classroom. The nonsense that I'm hearing coming from the unions representing the teachers does not make sense. And that at the same time, Peter, we have children in this country who does not have access to the internet while they're at home. Some of them don't even have a tablet or a computer that they can sit down to do the online classes. And that the best position and the best place for these individuals is face-to-face in the classroom. Mm. But we prefer to deny these individuals a right to education because somebody concerned that they may catch the coronavirus as they come to a classroom.
Patrick, I want you to continue and deal with your other issues. But just to say that I support your position in that regard. I do feel that teachers need to get back into the classroom, and there's a point at which there has to be a conversation about when we're going to stop with this. I live in France. Schools have been back in session for a long time, even with coronavirus, and there are protocols in place that govern when they would open, when they would close, because the concern, and I think this is a relevant concern, is that the longer you keep children out of the classroom, you may end up with problems that will make the coronavirus look like small potatoes. You may very well have long-term problems that are far more significant than the kind of problems that you're having there now if you keep children out for too long. There's vaccination for the teachers if possible. To me, there's a reasonable argument that the program that vaccinates teachers should be advanced because it is absolutely important that we get those children back into the classroom because the damage that is being done, especially to the poorer ones, is significant. Next point, Patrick.
The next point is the contractual arrangement arrangement, employment arrangement for public service. Because I hear a lot of song and dance on this same calling program that how people got mortgages and people got child loans and they owe the credit union. And if you put them on contract, what happens to these individuals? Peter, this model is a model that is accepted and tried and tested in the private sector. And that all individuals know that once they work in the private sector, on most occasions, that you enter the on the job on the employment contractual arrangement business. All of a sudden, everybody now have a concern because the government decided they will go in the direction of contractual arrangement employment. But the only persons who are concerned about this are the ones who don't want to perform, you know. That's the problem. Because if your contract, the renewal of your contract will be predicated on your performance, and you have a problem performing, then you've got a problem with the contractual arrangement. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. But if you intend to perform, you shouldn't got a problem with the contract. You shouldn't have a problem with it. You understand? Mm-hmm. Simple. The last thing I want to give it is the introduction to the minimum wage. Because I heard a lot of song of dads with supposed to be Democrat, they're probably Rand Waters, come to talk about now is not the time and the government needs to do this and the government. But I believe that Rand Waters should be shamed. Because that the Democrat Labour Party held office for the better part of 10 years. And that at no time I heard from any member, including the former member, Minister of Labour under the Democrat Labour Party, spoke to any serious issue about minimum wage. Right? And that I believe, Peter, if you were to tell me that if a person is in business the last 20 and 25 years and a lockdown for a month or two, shut a whole company down and that he can't get somebody $850 and he can continue to get them $450, this speaks volumes because that's something got to be inherently wrong in this here. So I want to find out from Mr. Edward Clark, the president of the private sector, when will be the right time for the introduction of minimum wage in this country? Because as now is not the time we want to hear when it will be. Because, and not only that, you have a rival, a character in the person of the owner character and Air One, who has presented his case that he's prepared to pay $10. All of a sudden, the rest can't pay $10. The rest comes to $4.50. The rest comes to $5. Mm-hmm. Peter, all I am saying is that this is slave wages. We cannot continue to do this nonsense to poor people. And why is buying handbags at $10,000 and driving $150,000 cars? We got workers working for pittance in this country. It can't be allowed to continue. And I support the Prime Minister wholeheartedly on this.
Okay. Good. All right, Patrick, thanks for your three contributions. I'm going to try and move the program along because we got a few people backed up. So thank you for the contribution. And I do hope that we can chat again in the not too distant future. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. Well, just to remind you that someone messed when he photographed a rape in progress and publicized it for the purposes of drawing it to the public attention, who is a well-known Trinidadian reporter. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Wickham.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty well. It was on now for nearly...
That is his Uncle Mark?
His Uncle Mark. It is.
Yeah, his song sounds that way.
I am not stepping out of my league, but it's just a matter of concern. I want to look at the capital spending in the estimates.
Mm-hmm.
As outlined by the Minister of Housing for the restoration of the House of Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the precincts of Parliament and how Parliament is laid out. I think you should be because being so active, you would have to have an idea. Now, his
went there once or twice.
His budget is about $3 million on the East Wing. I hope he's listening now. I hope that somebody's listening because there is an area and he gave a breakdown of how the money will be spent, air conditioning this, carpeting this, all of that. Now, I am one of the people who are well aware that part of the visitors to the parliament stem from the fact that the visitors' interests, both for the lower house and the upper house, does not lend a hand. I'm saying the same way you've got a wall lift, one floor elevator on the inside. that the time has come where they should think about putting elevators on the east wing and the rest of that wing in order to accommodate people who want to go up to the Senate to listen to debates in the Senate, and also people who want to go up into the lower house to listen to debate, because most of the people who are into the life politics in Parliament find it difficult to climb those winding stairs, all-time winding stairs, to go upstairs to the visitors' gallery to listen to Parliament. I feel that the time has come for Parliament to enhance the visitors, because obviously people are becoming a lot more concerned, a lot more interested, including young people, but the older folks have just desisted from going into Parliament because of the inconvenience of having to climb those winding stairs to get up to the chamber. Now, I'm saying that... Oh, hello?
No, I am hearing you, but I am understanding. I'm having challenges with one thing. I mean, I went to Parliament. Sandiford took us to Parliament back in the 1980s, the late 1980s, to watch a debate. I've been back once or twice since. But I'm trying to understand, when you can get Parliament on your laptop and watch it on television and listen to it on the radio, why would you want to go in there?
Peter, I do agree with you, but you must understand there's an element of people who are politically inclined in Barbados that the television don't mean much to them. There are people who believe...
Yeah, but Uncle Mark, I'm one of those people. I'm politically inclined, and I'm saying that if I go into Parliament, I have to dress, I have to put on clothes, I have to be searched, I have to be quiet and silent. I can't cuss when I like, I can't shout out when I'm happy, I can't show enthusiasm as I would if I am outside. So my question is, why would any normal person who is into politics want to be classified as a stranger to go in there to listen to a debate? You can watch one, unless you want to hear the estates.
If all of those things you were just telling me about, then the politician can't come out canvassing and soliciting a vote, because the very people that you have now talked about in relation to the condition are some of the very people that the politician go up car roads, go down water, right.
Fair enough. But that's my view. I think that it's hard to have a conversation about, you know, the need for elevator and thing for people to go upstairs, when the reality is that everyone has access on their computer, and it is broadcast live on 100.7.
You're dealing even to the case where I can give you a man who here that he has to pay his bills online, and he will carry all the bills out in the yard and put them on the line, and they get soaked. I'm serious now, right? There isn't everybody that will be inclined to online. There isn't everybody that will be inclined to television. There's a percentage of people, and I'm saying this because I've witnessed visitors to the island who come through that gate and stand in the courtyard of part of it, finding out exactly where to go because the museum is straight ahead of them. And then at Parliament, left and right, lower and upper house. I'm saying that here is also a case to pull in some resources. I feel, this is my feeling, right, that regardless of your standing of television and computer and that type of thing, that there's a need for an elevator in the east wing and an elevator down on the west wing where there's those old-time ACR steps. The last time Parliament was renovated was under the then Minister, Lionel Craig. Mm. This is when the roof was changed. I understand now that there's a leakage in the roof. I understand then that there was a copper roof that was supposed to be put on. A lot of work was done by MTW in that west wing, in that east wing. Mm. Excellent work.
All right. I'm of
the opinion that Part of that spending should be a one floor elevator on that side, east side, and on the so as to increase visitors. I don't think the parliamentarians want to stand and talk to each other. They want to see some movement within the galleries. Don't you agree with that?
I know. I don't know if I agree with you.
You're not going to agree with
because me. I think I know that they're there. Someone has just messaged and told me that they see where I'm coming from. They say that, you know, even Lil Rickinson, the school, or people watching and so on, anybody want to go into Parliament and be classified in that way.
Don't try to wash it down the sink. Lil Rick don't have to come out and beg the body for no vote. The politicians...
But the point is that we see the politicians... No, you know what I would suggest? You know what I would agree with you on? I feel that we need to have steps. We need to have elevators there, and I support that because I believe that parliamentarians may need to go upstairs. They may come a point when we have a disabled parliamentarian that is in a wheelchair, and that person will need to access parliament. So for those reasons, we need to have an elevator.
Peter, there's an elevator there already. You know that?
Right.
There's an elevator.
Right, no, there's an elevator, but you said it don't work.
No, I said it works. It works because occasionally the members of parliament use the elevator to get onto the first floor. What I am thinking about is that the base of what the average politician is based on people. People have been complaining as far as parliament is concerned, that parliament has no uses for the visitors gallery.
Mm.
As far as the lower house. So I am closing. I am closing.
Uncle Mark, we're gonna have to take a break now though, because we need to go to a commercial. So I want to thank you for your contribution. Let's run. Let's go and take a break and come back for more Down to Brass Tacks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Two quick points. Someone is saying to me that I try to put my views on everyone else, that we live in a diverse world of people who want to witness things in person. There's a calling program and there's a need for diversity of views. I'm not going to agree with everything that anyone says, and I don't have a problem. I mean, I don't see the problem with a person. We are entitled to go to parliament and sit. People who want to go can go and sit. But my question is, does it make sense for us to spend a substantial amount of money to install a second elevator to allow one or two people who may be disabled I want to go to watch debates to do so? There's an elevator there. Maybe arrangements can be made to use it, or alternatively, there are facilities whereby the vast majority of us who want to watch the debates can watch it. And I'm just saying that if you look at the cost of installing a separate public elevator as opposed to the benefit that would be gained in terms of the number of people that are likely to use it, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And then I also recall an event in 1986 when Lindsay Bolden was the speaker, and that was a televised debate during the budget that Richie Haynes said, the $15,000 budget. When Errol Barrow rose to speak, I remember the public gallery was so entertained by Barrow's speeches that the public gallery started to clap and bang on the tables and whatnot, bang on the benches at that point in time. And Mr. Bolden cleared the public gallery because he said, you know, the public is stranger, you're not allowed to show enthusiasm. I think that for me was an important point because it certainly says that maybe the budget should be like football, or the parliament should be like football, where you watch it from a place where if you were in a ramshot watching it, you can express yourself, you can talk to your friends, and you can enjoy it from that distance. But going in there imposes a certain stricture that we are not familiar with in this internet age. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Khalil Kasadwala here. How are you?
Hey, Khalil. How are you doing? Good to hear you on the program. How is everything going?
All is well with me. But I've called in this morning to speak about the issue of schools reopening, or more appropriately, I think the phased return to face to face instruction. And I really want to put it in context for the people who might be listening to the program today. And the first thing I'd like to say in that connection would be that in ordinary conversation, we are talking a lot about online education. But in truth and in fact, online education has a really specific meaning. And that is not what we're doing at the moment. What we're doing is emergency remote teaching. And you say to yourself, that is an academic distinction and it's not really relevant. But I will tell you why it is. Because online education refers to an instance where you have a tailored, purpose-built curriculum, syllabi. You have teachers who are trained in this modality. You have the teaching methodology is adapted. All of it is purpose-built to suit this online environment. That is not at all what we're doing right now, or what we have been doing, or what the rest of the world has been doing for the last year or so. What we are doing is emergency remote teaching. So we have simply transposed the physical classroom, and we have tried to make it work in a virtual setting because it was a response, a temporary response to a crisis. And indeed, it has had its place in terms of the fact that we have had to continue to educate people in the country, and we have had to do it in the strictures of COVID with lockdowns and whatever. So it has been a useful solution. But ultimately, it has always been intended to be a temporary solution to this crisis. And that is important, I think, in setting context for what I'm going to say to you. The second thing is that we have a situation where a lot of teachers, a lot of students are really laboring under the weight of this emergency remote teaching. And indeed, some might be even struggling. And for a number of reasons. The first one would be in terms of their physical health. So you have a lot of complaints by all accounts, things like eye strain, back problems, a repetitive strain injury in terms of continuous typing, that kind of thing. So that when we are talking in the wider context in the country about a remote work policy and who is to provide ergonomic chairs for workers while they're working from home, all of that is applying to school, to teachers, and all of that is applying to children. And that has become a real problem in terms of people's physical health. The next thing has been, of course, you hear about it a lot in terms of people's mental health. And you have the blurring of the lines that exist between work and between school, between work and school and the home, so that you might find yourself working for hours far in excess of what you would ordinarily find yourself doing. And that carries with it its own physical strain, stress, which manifests itself physically and emotionally, and as well to mental health issues. You have a lot of students who have a certain, who almost get anxious, Peter, in terms of feeling that they are drowning under a deluge of work. So that is not sustainable. That is not at all a sustainable position. And the next thing is that it is not an optimal situation in terms of the delivery of education, of teaching and learning, because you have a lot of instances where students might sign on to the class, and they are on. You can see that they're there in terms of their name or whatever, but they might then be going to do other things. And in some instances, it is because they've gone to, you know, use another device or whatever. But in some instances, it is because it's an older child who has had to leave their workstation to go and treat to a younger child who is also grappling with the online environment and who needs a greater level of assistance because, for example, in right now, you might have a parent who is back out to work.